Welcome to Financial Perspectives, the podcast. Join the team at Foster Group and our expert guests as we explore a variety of subjects that could impact your financial life. We will cover timely economic and financial market news, a wide range of personal financial planning ideas, and investment topics. Ultimately, we want to encourage educated optimism and do our best to provide valuable insights to help you navigate your financial journey with confidence. Please stick around at the end for important disclosure information. More information about Foster Group can be found in our ADV brochure at fostergrp.com.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us today. Cybersecurity is a critical challenge facing individuals and organizations, and phishing remains one of the most common and dangerous threats. Joining me today in the studio is Kate Jules. Kate is the Chief Compliance Officer and Chief Operations Officer here at Foster Group. She will help us understand what phishing is, why it's so prevalent, and how attackers make their schemes so convincing. We'll also dig into the growing risks from other trends we are monitoring. This was a popular subject last year, and I'm looking forward to getting an update from Kate on this topic, as well as some practical steps we can all take to protect ourselves from these evolving risks. Kate, welcome. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And I know that you spend a lot of time on this topic for the protection of the organization and our clients. And I know you have a lot of contacts within the financial industry and examples to share with the audience so that maybe they can learn and prevent this from happening to them. So again, looking forward to all of this. Can you just talk a little bit at first about why are we talking about this? Why is it important? Why was it so popular last year?
Well, I think it's something that we all kind of hear about and we know it impacts everyone. I was looking at some data over the weekend from the FBI, and in 2024, cybercrime wasn't just a crime, it was an industry. It represented over $12.4 billion in the United States alone. We don't have the 2025 information quite yet, but I think it's going to be something that's just a multiple of that. 2023 to 2024 saw an increase in cybercrime of 33%. So I think 24 to 25 is going to be something that's even bigger than that.
So it's growing rapidly. Who is most at risk here?
Well, it's interesting. In 2024, the FBI said individuals over 60, which is kind of commonly who I think about, who we think about being impacted by cybercrime, were victim about 34% of the time. That's a big number. But then that also means 66% of the time it's impacting somebody younger than that.
Yeah. So we all need to be aware of this topic. We all need to be
equipped.
You know, I think about my parents. I think about, you know, my husband and I and then our children, like multiple generations, right? This is definitely impacting all people.
Absolutely. And I think about how people engage with technology, whether it's, you know, my children all the way to myself, my parents, again, we all have risk in this and it's just different and it's all manageable, you know, in some capacity. So what we're going to talk about today is just how do we try and manage that risk across the cyber landscape?
Yeah. So there's a lot of definitions with this topic, and some of them are technology related, which can be a little bit intimidating. So let's just start. I mentioned phishing. Let's just start with that. What is phishing? And give us some examples of what that might look like.
So the simplest definition is when there's a phishing attempt, it's usually some sort of bot or non-individual. It's been cued by a human that's trying to cast a very wide net and see where it might be able to have success gaining access to either an account of some type, whether it's a financial account or an email account. So when we think about what they're trying to get access to, we would call it credentials. That's username and password together. Examples of what this might look like. You may get a email that looks like it's coming from Microsoft, and it will say, it's time for you to renew your Microsoft Outlook access, and it will have a button for you to push.
So it looks very credible.
Looks very credible, and it's going to say, enter your current username and password, right? And so we do that, but it's a scam. And now all of a sudden, maybe it goes away, or you get a nasty message and says, thank you, we now have access to your inbox. Another example would be that you get an email from somebody that you know, and it may say, Kate, Gretchen wants to connect with you on LinkedIn. And it will have a button to say connect here. When I do that, it takes me to a login screen that may look a lot like a LinkedIn login screen. I'm going to enter my username and password there. And then guess what? Somebody's gaining access to my entire LinkedIn network.
So how can you know if it's from a real LinkedIn request versus one that might be a scam? What are the tricks to look out for.
So I'd say two things that we're going to talk a lot about today is just stop and think for a minute,
yeah,
right? And the other thing is just to be a little bit skeptical all the time. So anytime that something is coming to you that you don't expect, pause and be a little bit skeptical. But this is a theme that we'll come back to again and again today. You're always best option is to go directly to the source, not to an email or an attachment that's in front of you. You know, in that case, go to LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Do I have a request there? Go to my Microsoft actual account. It will tell you there. The other thing is, you know, you can always hover over links and see where it's actually taking you to, because most of the time it's not taking you to the actual site. But fraudsters have gotten really clever about that and replacing things like a lowercase I with a lowercase L. So it's very difficult to visually detect where there might be a small difference in an URL.
So we really just have to be on high alert all the time. And if there's anything in us that says, I don't know about this, go verify, right?
Stay skeptical. Take a minute and stay skeptical. But there are a number of things that you can put in place to help protect yourself that are relatively simple and straightforward and go a long way. So we'll talk about those things today.
Okay, great. And then it comes through email, but it can also come through other forms. Is that
absolutely
correct?
Yeah, most traditionally we see it come through email. We're also hearing a lot of fraud attempts coming via SMS or text on your phone, and also phone calls to you, whether it's somebody impersonating Microsoft or Apple, Social Security Administration. All of those things are happening.
Okay. So we talked about phishing, and now that's even evolving, right? Now we have spear phishing. And so here's another definition. Why don't you go ahead and define what this is, and what does this look like in real life?
Yeah, so spear phishing is going to be a much more targeted phishing attack. So it may be a situation where a cyber criminal has gained some level of access to information about you. Maybe they intercepted a piece of mail by accident or on purpose. Maybe they bought your name somewhere, but they may know something about you that makes you an attractive victim for them. So in that scenario, they're trying to get access, you know, to compromise your credentials in some capacity. And what we're seeing more and more is it's not like a quick hit, like where they're in and out. They're staying. They're staying in that account. They're getting to know you, maybe in your email account, your tone, who you interact with, the types of transactions that you are handling via email, so that when there is the opportunity to act, they can do that. The other thing that we can see the cyber criminals doing more and more is during that time in there, if they actually get your username and password, and then in your email inbox, they see your bank statement come through, or they see your an investment statement come through, they're going to go try those sites and see if you reused your username and password on those.
So very concerning that you might have somebody in your inbox, very much an unwelcome guest, right?
Yes.
And think of all the things that go through our inbox, right, that we would not want someone to have access
right.
to.
Right. It's not just your inbox. It's your sent items and your deleted items, too, because those are available to them. But maybe the most valuable thing might be your contact list, because while a fraud may start with one person, the spear phishing attack, they may say, actually, the really attractive thing is their contact list and all the people they know. And so then all of a sudden they can initiate an email from you that goes out to your entire network, and it can look really legitimate. And all of a sudden, your entire network could be falling victim to it.
Yeah, that would be not a great day.
It's a horrible,
right?
It's a horrible feeling. We had it happen. An example that I heard of this last year was there was a local professional club. It sent out an invoice. Somebody at the professional club, their email had been compromised. They distributed an invoice to everybody on their distribution list.
Yeah.
It was kind of in line with whether they usually send a renewal or a statement out. But when people clicked on that link, it asked them to log into their account, and it was not legitimate.
Okay.
And so there was a number of people in that professional club then who got compromised on this, you know, unexpected invoice coming from somebody they knew was, like, to be a legitimate person. Unfortunately, the site that they entered into just was not legit.
So another example of how this can be look so legitimate, right, but hard to detect, which is why, again, you need to stay skeptical as for using these.
Yeah. I think one of the things that you can also think about, you know, early and often is for these kind of what I would call like a critical account or a critical system that you use all the time. Nearly all of the legitimate ones offer multi-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so in that scenario, it means when you go to log in, it's going to either send you a push notification to your cell phone. It, you know, call you sometimes and give you a verbal code. They can give you a code to enter into the site. But that multi-factor is a layer that is, for a cyber criminal, it's very hard for them to bypass. And sometimes it just gives you enough time between entering credentials and waiting that you think, wait, is this legit? Have I done my due diligence here? So enabling multi-factor on all those critical systems goes so far. Some sources will say it can eliminate up to 98% of cybercrime.
That's an incredible number. And so just a little bit of effort on the front end could prevent you a lot of time on the back end.
I know. I was actually talking with my dad last year, and he asked me, is there any way I can turn this off? Just irritates him. And I said, no, absolutely not. So it is one of those simple things. Like, it can seem like a nuisance in the moment. But it goes so far in helping you operate safely.
Yeah. Okay. That's a great example. Let's move on to some of the different emerging trends that we're seeing. You know, we talk about how AI is becoming a household tool, right? People are using this to put recipes together. Talk about some of the things that we're seeing with like AI and deep fakes and explain that to our listeners and maybe some examples of those.
So a deep fake would be a scenario. There's a lot of layers we could go into. Yes. We're going to keep it very simple for the purpose of this conversation, where we're able to take someone's likeness. A lot of times it's video of them. Even with a picture of the face from a couple of different angles, AI can generate a very, very real likeness of somebody. And then with just a few seconds of voice recording, they can also kind of learn your voice. So all of a sudden they can either make a call that sounds just like you, or they could even scarier do a video that sounds like you. There's a couple of examples that I think should be eye-opening as we think about this. There was a financial institution that I know of, had a financial institution customer who had done the same type of transaction, you know, on an ongoing basis, talked to their relationship manager they knew at that institution, asked for a wire, a large amount of money, just as they had in the past. It was not legit.
Okay.
To the person who had known, you know, the person, relationship manager who had known them for 20 years, thought that they were talking to their client, and it was a voice deep fake. Another common one that we're hearing more and more within our industry is a scenario where there'll be some sort of audio call, usually to a grandparent, of a grandchild's voice, and saying, hey, I'm traveling, or I got in huge trouble, and I don't want to tell mom and dad, can you send me some money? And those ones are somewhat hard to detect, but again, it's just like, be a little bit skeptical on those.
Yeah. So we, you know, take down our defenses a little bit when we see a familiar face or hear a familiar voice. And so we do still need to just really maintain a high level of scrutiny when it comes to these things.
We do. And this is the part for me that I think is maybe the most discouraging. You know, we know of an example this year as well, where this idea of whether it's a deep fake or just like a hyper realistic fake persona, it's really hard to experience and not feel kind of a level of shame, especially if you fall for it. So we know somebody who was going, met somebody, you know, professionally, learned about their business. They had a really niche industry. This person decided to make an investment in it. This person had a website. They had a business card. They had met face to face. And person made the investment and then poof, all of it disappeared. It was a total fraudster. Yeah. So some of that is discouraging, but we have to do the best we can to detect the risks. And, you know, just staying a tiny bit skeptical can always help.
Yeah. I know you talk about it's almost impossible to, you know, prevent this 100%, right? And so what we are doing is we are trying to put things in place that will at least reduce the risk.
Right. And I think, you know, when we go back to those things, it's the very basics. Multi-factor. Don't reuse passwords, please. Yeah. And then just this idea of like just being a little bit skeptical. It doesn't mean that you have to change necessarily your behavior about how you interact with technology. Do those two things and then a little bit skeptical. And I think you're protecting yourself from a lot of the big trends that we see out there.
Okay. And then what about, we hear the word Internet of Things or the phrase Internet of Things. Talk to us about how that relates to cybersecurity.
Yeah. So again, the simplest definition for the purposes of this conversation, think about all the smart devices that you might have in your home. So Internet of Things, my thermostat, my refrigerator, my garage door, my smart camera system that I have from a security standpoint, those things would be considered your Internet of Things. So where we start to see that kind of get like, oh, this becomes really not fun. Let's say that you're a password reuser, especially at a household level, so that everybody kind of knows how to manage those things. Well, that password username, you know, gets compromised. And all of a sudden, someone has access to a lot of things that are really near and dear to you. Mm-hmm. From a physical security standpoint, they can probably open your garage door, maybe even your front door, if it's, you know, security enabled.
Very concerning.
It is very concerning. But I think just the sense of discomfort that we hear too, especially in these spear phishing, if someone knows that they have someone a little bit on edge, even if they think they've been detected, they will sometimes get pretty psychological in nature and how they're engaging people. So all of a sudden then, you know, this fraudster is going to tell you, I've got access to your children's photos that I got through your email. I can see you in your house right now.
Yeah.
They're going to tell you things like that. And it just really layers on to how a victim is impacted by these type of things.
You provide us a lot of information about what's out there, what's happening, what's evolving. We just want to reduce risk. We don't want to create too much fear. We just want to be responsible. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about what are some of the protection strategies that our listeners can use in order to not fall victim to these things.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, because I think if I wouldn't want anyone lying in bed at night and listening to every little clicker noise in the house, mm-hmm. and just feeling anxious about it. And it's the same thing. I wouldn't want someone using technology or considering using technology and just being absolutely fearful of it. So I probably sound like a broken record here, right? Multi-factor, enable that on every account you can, especially your most critical accounts. I think the second thing is don't reuse passwords. I would recommend using something like a password manager. That is going to be a third-party system. Examples would be Keeper or 1Password. There's a few out there, mm-hmm. that can store your credentials for all your sites securely. And it will create very long and complex passwords for you, but manage them for you. And then you can have it auto-fill those as you use them, too. You can share securely through that system.
Yeah.
One of the nice things about a password manager as well is they usually have something that you'll see called like a breach watch or risk alert, where if there is a website that you have in your kind of keeper there, mm-hmm. if they've had a known compromise, it will tell you and ask you to go out and change your password. So those tools can be super helpful just in managing. I mean, those two things alone manage so much risk. You know, then I think it gets into the behavioral things, mm-hmm. of stay skeptical, take a pause. If anybody's ever encouraging you to act urgently or do this right now or else, it is worth taking a breath. If you don't know the person calling you, or even if you think you do, it is never in poor form just to stop talking. Quit responding to the text. Hang up. Think about it for a minute. If it's a financial institution particularly, call them back on the number that you know to be legitimate, mm-hmm. and ask them if it's a real conversation. So this is something where you kind of have to let manners and nicety go to protect yourself in it, mm-hmm. just as I would want you to do if you were worried about your physical security.
Yeah, and the financial institutions are... They're used to this, right? And
100%
welcome
used to it.
Right?
Yes.
Because it means that their clients,
yes.
are being careful.
We had an example in the last year where a client called us and said, hey, I've been talking with this person over the course of like a day and a half, where they were posing to be from a regulatory body saying, hey, we've got to protect your assets at this, you know, financial institution, so I'm going to help you move them to a new account. None of it was legitimate. And we were so thankful that this person reached out to their financial institution in question because they were able to say no and notify other clients that it was happening.
Yeah, very much best practice.
Very much best practice, yeah. Yes. Yes.
Okay, what if there's someone out there listening that thinks they might be a victim? What are sort of the immediate steps that they should take?
I would say the first thing I would say is don't be ashamed. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have been there, and I think, you know, in these spear phishing attacks, some of these cyber criminals target in the game of shame. So if they're telling you they saw you on their webcam, you know, they know something that you looked at on the internet, this is part of how they're attacking. So don't be ashamed, mm-hmm. but take action. I think the first thing that I would do would be to look at something like ID Shield or LifeLock, something that can help you manage your overall kind of online presence in there. The second thing that I would probably do is consider initiating a credit freeze, which you can do very easily with credit agencies. But those are kind of two triage, like stop right now and do those things. Financial institutions would be next, of notifying them of this. There are a number of different things that most financial institutions can do that can really quickly help create an additional layer of security on any of your financial accounts. You know, it's hard. There's going to be times where you do need to make a report to law enforcement, and that's going to really be determined based on kind of what happened there, if money actually moved or not. You know, unfortunately, I think there is such a backlog of this crime, and it's really hard to detect, that we have not seen a ton of those go a lot of places. But I think it's still helping other people know what the trend is. You know, those are things that are important out there.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned quite a few tools that are really helpful, whether it's the password keepers or multi-factor authentication or ID protection. And, you know, you gave a few recommendations on that, but also people can lean into their financial organizations as far as what they're recommending.
Absolutely.
And they're not too hard to implement. I mean, it might take a little bit of work to put them in initially, but, you know, then they work pretty slick, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of different options out there. Like us, most financial institutions are not going to share their exact protocol in a video like this.
Yes.
Because it creates additional risk for our clients and for the organization. But there are definitely things that are available to end consumers out there from any type, particularly a financial institution.
Yeah. And as one of those organizations, I mean, we are investing in professional IT, right, in order to protect your organization.
Yes. We do have a dedicated IT team here, which is a little bit unusual for an organization of our size, but really important to us. And then we have a number of different external tools, resources, consultants that we use to help manage our risk and keep our clients safe.
All right. Well, in closing then, any last words that you want to share? Anything you want to leave a listener with as far as takeaways? And I have maybe a little bit of an idea what those might be, but.
Yeah, I think I would go back to, you know, take a couple hours. I think this is, it can seem like this can be really daunting to do some of these things, but every time you log into a site that you don't have multi-factor on, look and see if it's an option for you.
Okay.
I think take an afternoon. Make a special cup of tea, settle in, and set up a password manager. It seems daunting, but I think if you actually take the time to do that, you would find that it's going to give you just that little added element of feeling a little bit more secure.
Okay, and you're going to convince your dad not to...
He didn't. I talked him out of it.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Well, thank you so much, Kate, and thanks to all of you for joining us for this important discussion on phishing awareness and advanced cyber threats. As we've learned today, phishing attacks are evolving, moving beyond simple scams to highly targeted strategies. Cybersecurity is everyone's responsibility, and the best defense starts with awareness. By staying informed and vigilant, we can reduce the risk and protect our sensitive information. As always, if you have other topics you'd like to see us address, please let us know at our website, fostergrp.com. And also, if you're joining us on our podcast, would you consider giving us a like on your podcast app and share with your friends? That's all for now. See you next time.
The previous presentation by Foster Group was intended for general information purposes only. No portion of the presentation serves as the receipt of, or as a substitute for, personalized investment advice from Foster Group or any other investment professional of your choosing. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk, and it should not be assumed that future performance of any specific investment or investment strategy, or any non-investment related or planning services, discussion, or content, will be profitable, be suitable for your portfolio or individual situation, or prove successful. Foster Group is neither a law firm nor accounting firm, and no portion of its services should be construed as legal or accounting advice. No portion of the content should be construed by a client or prospective client as a guarantee that he or she will experience a certain level of results if Foster Group is engaged, or continues to be engaged, to provide investment advisory services. A copy of Foster Group's current written disclosure brochure discussing our advisory services and fees is available upon request or at www.fostergrp.com/disclosures.